26 after 2 with Jake Lawrence. On the line with me is Marty Haggard. How are you doing this afternoon, Marty?
I'm doing wonderful, brother. How about yourself?
Very good, and thank you for taking the time. It's been a little bit of a panic mode of late in the last few minutes, but we managed to pull it off and get you on the air here.
Well, I'm glad to relieve your panic.
Indeed you did. Let's start things off. You just, by the way, are you in the area now? Did you make it into Quebec?
Not yet. We'll be flying out tomorrow morning to get there. We're over in Halifax right now.
Oh, you're in Halifax. Yeah, I was on your website this week, and I just called it up here just a few minutes ago and noticed that you did a tour of Halifax. And after your show here in Ganawaga, you're going back to Newfoundland.
Yes, sir. We got 5 dates over there, and I'm just all over this eastern side of Canada and Newfoundland and having a good time.
You know what? I wanted to bring up to you that Nova Scotia, of course, New Brunswick, Newfoundland, they are the greatest people in our country. You must be having a blast, because we were even joking, Marty's not going to make it here. They're going to kidnap him.
Well, you know, you couldn't have said a truer statement. I'm shocked by how kind these people are. And I don't know why I'm shocked. I'm just saying that I'd love to duplicate these people, take them home with me. And I know for a fact Newfoundland's full of some wonderful people, too. So whatever you guys got in your water up here, keep drinking it.
Oh, it's called Newfie Screech. I'm serious. Well, you think they're nice in Nova Scotia. They're fantastic people. My wife's family comes in there. I've been there. And it's like I've been all over Canada, parts of the state, to go there and go, oh, no, I want to stay here. And then, but wait till you get to Newfoundland. They're amazing people. But when you're there, Marty, ask for Newfie Screech. It's a kind of a rum that they make.
Newfie Screech.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ask for
okay.
Yeah, it'll burn your mouth. Trust me.
Okay. Well, I'm probably going to give it a chance.
Oh, there you go. So I'm glad you're having a good time over there. Just for the people here, I just, you know, looking you up and knowing about your father and stuff like that. And, wow, I found some surprising things about you. And you're quite the man. And I am very honored here to talk to you and seeing, you know, the life that you've been living and stuff like that. It's quite incredible.
Grief. I appreciate that, brother. Yeah. It's only a... You should have been on the front row. Wasn't that fun?
Oh, no kidding. I can imagine. Now, first of all, let's, you know, just for our audience out there, get some basic about you. I mean, your name's Marty, and your father named you after Marty Robbins. Is this true?
That's true.
Yeah, well, I guess they were good friends. How do you feel about that? Did you get to meet Marty Robbins before he passed away?
Oh, God, yeah. I was actually an honorary pallbearer at Marty's funeral.
Oh, wow.
We were very close. Yeah. My dad... always took me on the road with him until I started my own thing and all my childhood from probably 8-9 years old on. And in the last 7 years of Marty's life, he and my dad worked together almost predominantly. 7 years of package show for Marty and my dad. And heck, I ended up riding on Marty's bus more than I did my dad. And
oh, wow.
We ended up becoming very good friends. And like I said, I was an honorary pallbearer at his funeral. And me and his son, Ronnie, are pretty good friends. So. Yeah, it was more than just a casual relationship there.
He was like an uncle to you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And he probably taught me a lot of things that I use to this very day about the stage and just certain little things. You know, he helped me cut my teeth, and he's taught me some pretty good things.
Oh, wow. No, what a mentor to have. I mean, besides your dad as well, you know. And for the first part of your life, you were raised by your grandmother.
Yes, sir.
How did that go? Your father was absent at the time, I guess?
Well, you know, when he first got out of San Quentin prison, you know, and he started, he was a convict, I mean, an ex-convict, and the law just would not allow him to have custody of us, and he hadn't proven himself yet.
Right.
And my grandma Haggard was the one that petitioned the court to get custody of us kids so that they wouldn't foster us out, because Mom and Dad both were struggling with their life, and the courts were going to take us away from both of them. And, but my Grandma Haggard's the one that went and asked if she could have us and kept us together until he got it together. And, from the time I was 6-7 years old till I was about 11 years old, Grandma took care of us. And then eventually we moved in with Dad once he finally got it all together. And, he was fit before that, but he was still in the process of building a career. And back in those days, he could leave to go on the road, and he might be on the road for 2 months, you know?
Yeah. And that was all coming out of Bakersfield, I guess. He was still located in that area.
Yes. Yes, and everything was a long way from there, because in America, the predominant country music market is, you know, east of Oklahoma City, let's say. You know?
Yeah.
And it wasn't, you know, it's probably 10 to 1 on that side of the country to the other side. And so every time he took off to go to work, his first job was probably 2,500 miles away. You know?
Oh, wow. Because, you know, it's very interesting because yesterday I was talking, and I'm hoping you know who it is, to John McPhee of the Doobie Brothers, who mentioned your father's an influence and was raised in the same area.
Really?
Yeah. And,
well, I know that my dad's had a lot of influence in other branches of music. I mean, I know it for a fact. I mean, I'm not shocked to hear that, but that's really encouraging. I mean, because Dad, his effect and or influence really went way past country music. I mean,
absolutely.
Rolling Stones and the Beatles and, you know, the Grateful Dead, if you name it.
Well, you know what I love? I have the Street Survivors album from Lynyrd Skynyrd, their last real album,
right,
as far as I'm concerned, and their version of a Honky Tonk Nighttime Man.
Right.
I mean, I love your father's version.
Yeah.
And I heard that one, and it just blew me away. And I go, what is it? And then I looked up the credits. I said, that's a Merle Haggard song. This is years ago, mind you. You know?
Remember in the song, they said it sounded like Roy.
That's right.
My dad's a guitar player. You
know? Oh, that's, I was thinking Roy Clark, because that's the only one I could think of at the time.
No, it was Roy Nichols they were referring to.
Yes, I know.
It was actually in Lynyrd Skynyrd. It was actually in their will that their request that Dad sing at their funeral if they ever died, which ironically, unfortunately, happened. But,
yeah.
You know, so he was such a big deal to them, he was in their will that they requested he sing at their funeral. So, I mean, he was their major influence.
Wow. You're listening to K103. I got Marty Haggard, who is playing at the Knights of Columbus tomorrow right here in Ganawage. Marty, you were into acting for a while. I don't think a lot of people know that, even in a TV movie with Henry Fonda. Tell me about your acting career, and why did you stop doing it?
I really wasn't into acting.
Oh, okay.
I did it. I was in a little TV series on a very reoccurring role kind of thing, and I was working on a movie with Henry Fonda when I got shot.
Yes.
You know, picked up the hitchhiker and got shot, and it kind of. But I wasn't really into the movie thing because I wanted to be an actor. How that happened was, my dad had a friend. His name was Robert Totten.
Mm-hmm.
Bob was the guy that directed all the Gunsmokes and some other projects. And he was over the house one day. I was probably a 16-year-old kid, and I just happened to walk by. He and my dad were sitting at the kitchen table talking, and he yelled out, "Hey, Marty, I got a pilot I'm filming next week." He said, "Won't you come to LA and read for a part in that thing?" I said, "I don't want to be no actor." And I kept walking, and he yelled out how much it paid, and I said, "Well, I'll be there." And so I went, and I didn't think I'd get the part, but I did. And you know what's ironic about that? My dad and I went on tour right after that meeting with Robert, and we were actually in Nova Scotia.
Oh, really?
We got the call. I had read for it, and then we went on tour. I got a call while we were in Nova Scotia and said that I got the part, but I had to be there like in 2 days. And so I flew all the way from Nova Scotia to Los Angeles, California.
Yeah.
And so anyway, but it was just a little thing I did. I'm glad I did it. I didn't know what I was doing, but it was a good experience. I learned some things, but I didn't intend on being an actor. I just wanted to get paid.
Yeah, no kidding, eh? Yeah, you got to eat. Would you ever consider it again? Let's say someone offered you a part now, even a small part or a cameo?
Actually, now I would probably actually enjoy it. And yes, I would pursue it because, you know, then I think I could really enjoy acting right now.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me about, on and off through your career, you've created and written your own music and put it out there. And you also, I guess, correct me here if I'm trying to get my time changes right here. You also on and off worked with your father, right? In his band. How did that work? Explain it.
Not really worked with him. I worked with him for a year, year and a half back in 82, 83.
Mm-hmm.
I was just starting out myself.
Okay.
Band in 79. I worked with him for 3 or 4 years out on the road, and something happened. My dad needed me to help him out, so I went to work. And I ended up going in his band for about a year, year and a half. But after that, I went back to doing my own thing, and I never have worked with him since then. For him, I should say.
Yeah, yeah. Working on your own, do you find it difficult, or does it come up that you're living under your father's shadow? Do you find that a barrier you have to cross or confront?
No, not at all. That stuff only exists if I let it, and it don't.
Yeah.
I got nominated in 1987 as top new my vocalist of the year. So I'm my dad is, this little period of what I'm doing right now, doing his music. That's something I've been doing for about 5 years.
Okay.
It's something I chose to do.
Mm-hmm.
It ain't something I have to do. I've got my own little following out there. And like I said, I had my own career, but you know, I'm out of the mainstream music business. I'm not in Nashville no more, and I don't want to ever be in there again.
Okay.
And but I've had my own, you know, certain level of success with my own career, and I ain't doing this because I have to. I'm doing it because I want to. And Dad, we're not in competition. You know, the shadows and the filling of shoes and stuff like that's a myth. You know. I got my own shoes on. I got my own shadow, trust me.
Yeah. Well, no, I really admire your attitude. That's a very, very healthy way to look at it, and it's obviously working for you. You're going to be in town. What can the fans expect from you, from your show?
Honest. It's real, real intimate. It's very, what I call living room type. I tell little stories about certain songs, you know, and the music's guaranteed to be country music, real country. And, I'm a little bit more of a talker than my dad was. So there's a little more of a communication involved in the show. And I don't know. I just know that the feedback we're getting is consistently the same. People love it. And,
excellent.
You know, I love my dad, and that's what this is about for me. It's not about Merle Haggard. It's about my dad. And, I know that he has, he's part of these people's life too. And, all we do is end up going, I was there when he cut everything he ever cut. So, I mean, I'm talking about these things on a front row level and, you know, but it's just a real intimate sharing of, my dad and, people love him. And, I love him. So we got that in common.
Oh, that's excellent. Are you going to be throwing, is it strictly your dad's songs or are you going to throw some of your own in there?
Yeah, I'll throw some of my own things in there here and there. And
good idea.
You know, it's not all Dad, but, but you know, it's primarily a little bit of a tribute to him, and you know, which is fun for me. Like I said, I don't have to do this, but I sure want to. I mean, good grief. If you don't like my dad's music, you're deaf.
You know? Absolutely, yeah. No, but it gives you great pleasure to do it. And you know what? That does translate to the audience. People know that when you're up there singing and putting those songs out there that you do love them. And, you know, it creates a beautiful, positive energy to the crowd.
Absolutely. It's going over very well for them and me. And but I'm not trying to be something I'm not. I'm not trying to be him. I'm just he's my dad. And I'm just, you know, this is maybe partially therapeutic for me at this point.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. Let me, before I let you go, just one quick question. I'm into guitars a little bit, not much of a guitar player, but your father has a very popular, or should I say, Telecaster that Fender helped design one. Is that the guitar of your choice?
Well, I had one. In fact, the first two that he had built back in the, when was it? Early 80s.
Yeah.
They're called Tough Dog.
Yeah.
The first two that he ever built, one was for him, one was for me. And, but I don't play electric anymore. I play acoustic.
Oh, okay.
And, so it's a great guitar. It's got mine weighed about 2.5 pounds. I mean, because Dad had a bad back and so do I. And he built that guitar with the weight in mind. And, but it was a real lightweight guitar, but it sounded really fat. So it's a very, very good guitar, but I got one, but I don't play it on stage no more.
Oh, okay. All right, great. So, well, thank you for taking the time, Marty, to talk to us. Everybody's as anxious to see your show tomorrow night. We got a great opening band called Midnight Renegades that I'm sure you're going to enjoy as well. Are you going to get out and mingle in the crowd afterwards?
Oh, yeah. I'm the last one to leave the building.
Oh, excellent. Well, thank you again for the time. And again, don't forget, what are you going to look for in Newfoundland?
How do you say that?
Newfie Screech.
Yeah. I've got a guy standing here from Newfoundland. He'll keep that in mind for me. He'll help me not forget it.
Well, thank you very much. Just hold on the line just for a second here. While we sign off here, I got a song that I'm going to play for you just to let everybody know that tomorrow night there's still some tickets available